So is yesterday, and so is tomorrow, and every day from now until forever. Do you guys ever think about dying?
Suffers a crisis that leads her to question her world and her existence. It is the unlikely success story of 2023. We are talking about the Barbie movie right here on an all-new episode of Extras and Epilogues on the Podzilla 1985 Network. My name is Shannon Young. I'm going to be your host tonight. With me, of course, I have my co-host slash other host for Extras and Epilogues, Mr. Hunter Hendricks.
Hi, Barbie.
Hey, Barbie. We have Barbie herself, Lindsay Wolfgang.
Ken.
The only Barbie person here, like the only person that actually had any interactions with Barbies, as far as I know, although let's send it over to Alan, it's Ethan Craig Miles.
Hey, how's it going? It's good to be on the show.
Nope, you're ruining it. Say hey, Ken.
Hey, Ken.
And also we have Moonshine Still Ken. Tanner Calvert's listening.
Hi, Barbie.
There it is. Hey, Barbie. Hey, Ken. Hey, Alan. Hey,
Amy. I really kind of wanted him to say, howdy, Barbie.
Howdy, Ken.
I hate it. So, last week the Kaz man was on here. We talked about The Matrix. Kaz did a great job of changing some minds and hearts about The Matrix.
Yeah, that's what he did.
Originally tonight, we were going to talk about Being John Malkovich, which is a very, very insider artsy film from 1999 starring John Malkovich, Cameron Diaz, and a couple other great actors. Unfortunately, we did not want to spend the money on watching it. So
that is a true story of why we're not covering that.
That is the actual story.
$4 to watch on Amazon, and we all went, are you fucking kidding me?
I'm not paying $4 to watch a great film. Absolutely not.
No.
So then we switched it. Hunter suggests Election, another fantastic movie. Matthew Broderick, Reese Witherspoon, great movie.
Yep.
But our third for that unfortunately did not materialize. So we decided to, speaking of materialize, we decided to cover The Material Girl. Now that's Madonna.
Yeah, that's completely different.
well, they're kind of similar. They're both women and have hair.
You did it. You broke it down to its bare essentials.
So Hunter messaged me today and just said, you know, hey, you want to just take the week off? And I thought, let's do Barbie. Like, it's new. I know it's breaking our chain of the 1999, but that's okay.
I mean, we started this show with a non-99 movie. Like,
right.
That's totally acceptable. And we were never going to just... Yeah, we were never going to stick to that list beginning to end. I definitely would like to do more things from it,
yeah.
But that was really just kind of a concept to get us going.
Right, so well, occasionally we'll break it, but we've had some great success here on the show, and we've talked about some of our favorite films, and spoiler alert, Barbie is without doubt, I can't even say probably, it is my favorite film of 2023 so far. It
still boggles my mind, but I mean, it's really good.
It was fantastic. I knew it was going to be fun. I knew it was going to be funny, but they took it in all kinds of directions that I didn't expect. And we're going to talk about that here in a little bit. So Barbie, 2023, Margot Robbie, Ryan Gosling, America Ferrera. I always mispronounce her name. Will Ferrell. And
you got that one though. Nailed it.
That would be pretty funny.
That's not his name.
Shut up, Tanner. And
you're just listening. Shut up.
And Sima, is it Sima Liu? Is that how you pronounce it? I always mispronounce his name too.
Yes. Simu Liu.
Well, not just that. Michael Cera is in it.
Yes.
I mean, it's a great cast. It's a fantastic cast.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, when I put these together, I'm almost always taking the top four listed.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, you're not going to argue. I don't think anybody would argue that Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling are the two biggest people in this movie.
Oh, absolutely.
America Ferrara just happens to be like kind of the surprise protagonist.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Will Ferrell has the biggest, I'd say, cameo. So.
Yeah. But then you also do have a list of cameos from some fantastic actors and actresses, singers. Dua Lipa is in it. John Cena is in it. I mean, it's a who's who. It's fantastic.
Issa Rae is having a great summer.
She is.
Issa Rae does this. She's Spider-Woman in Across the Spider-Verse.
Right.
her show Insecure, not this summer, but wrapped up, if I remember correctly, earlier this year. She's doing a lot of things right now. Absolutely. And she got to be President Barbie.
She was.
That's a big mm-hmm. deal.
And she was fantastic. Spoiler alert, I'm just going to get this out of the way now. We often talk about, when we talk about the movies, we give a thumbs up, thumbs down, a la the great Gene Siskel and Robert Ebert. I'm just going to get it out of the way. This is the first time I've ever done this. Double thumbs up on this one. This one, to me, it's not a perfect film. I don't think I've ever seen a perfect film, but it is amazing. So let's get this out of the way real quick, Hunter. We'll go to you first. What do you say? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
It's two thumbs up. It's 100% two thumbs up. I've seen a lot of great movies this year, in my opinion. I've seen a lot of stuff I really, really enjoyed. I don't know that I can definitively say this is the best movie I've seen this year, because Guardians of the Galaxy 3 also came out, and it was so, so incredibly good.
Right.
But if nothing else, those two are neck and neck. You know, I've had the fortune of rewatching Guardians since it came out more recently, and more recently than I've seen Barbie, because we saw this the weekend it came out, which has now been about a month ago.
Yeah.
Guardians hit Disney Plus not that long ago, and so again, I've seen it more
recently. Yeah, and it made me ugly cry.
It did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The first time, I don't want to go too much on a tangent there, but the first time I saw that movie was at 10 o'clock at night, the Friday it came out, sitting in the theater with a cup of coffee, and by the time I was done, the coffee cup was filled with my tears.
And you recycled anyway, and you drank them, and you cried more.
I drank that too, yes.
Yeah. The bones were your money.
These and the worms. These are the only two movies, though, of all the ones that I've seen. I loved a lot of movies, and it's bizarre to me that in a year that the last Indiana Jones movie came out, that I would still say that I have two other two thumbs up movies, right, and that's not one of them. So, yeah.
If I had to, and Ethan and Lindsay, we're going to get to you guys here in a second about thumbs up, thumbs down. So the way we do it, by the way, just so you know, is, thumb in the middle, you care neither way. There's two up, one up, middle,
one up,
one down, two down. Just depending on how much you love or dislike the film.
It's a five-star system, basically.
Basically.
Thanks, Asa.
Yes, he's a five-star man. And I think that I went into this year expecting Evil Dead Rise to be my favorite movie, but it's definitely second place for me. And I loved Evil Dead Rise. It's also not a perfect movie. And I've seen, I think, less movies this year than you have in theater, so mine's a little bit more skewed. But my ranking would probably go Barbie, Evil Dead Rise, Mario Brothers, Renfield. And I think that might be the only four films I've seen in theater this year, Lindsay, unless I'm...
Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, I don't remember. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we watched D&D also.
Never mind. So it would probably go... Barbie, top five, Barbie, Evil Dead Rise, Dungeons and Dragons, Mario, and then Renfield. But I liked all five of the films, for the record. Lindsay, how about you? How would you rank Barbie and Dragons?
Barbie and Dragons.
You know what I'm trying to say.
That's it.
Give me a thumbs rating.
I am also going to give it two thumbs up because it hit my nostalgia factor. It kept me engaged the entire time, and it was just a really good movie. And I did not expect to cry at a Barbie movie, but I did.
Oh, we'll get to that part. Now, normally we keep this to a three-person show. Tonight we had to add on an extra person because Lindsay, as I said, is the only person here that, as far as I know, actually played with Barbies. Now, maybe we'll find some things out tonight, and that's perfectly okay. Ethan, thumbs up, thumbs down, where do you rank this movie?
Honestly, I got to give it two thumbs up. Like, this movie, it shocked me. I thought it was really funny. It had a lot of weird, interesting, like, cinematography.
Oh, yeah.
I thought the writing was really good. All around, it's a very solid film, and I'd go see it again if I could.
Well, you can. Good news. Ethan's seen it twice in theaters.
It's not illegal.
He's put more time in than any of us. We're going to get into the nuts and bolts of the film, the plot, what we liked, what we didn't like, et cetera, et cetera. Before we do, Hunter, though, since today is normally when we do Pro Wrestling Unscripted, I think we would be a failing if we neglected to mention the fact that Terry Funk passed away today.
Yeah, and I was going to talk about it tomorrow, but I think it is important that we mention it today since it is the day of, especially if this goes up. It'll go up faster than tomorrow's show.
Yeah.
But yeah, Terry Funk... I feel weird not knowing that he was in such poor health. I had no idea he was battling dementia and Parkinson's at the same time.
Oh.
Yeah.
And he's almost, or he was almost 79. 80 years old. He's 79.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's something to be said, I feel like we do this a lot when wrestlers pass away. It's that the man lived a long life in an industry where you don't often get to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But God, I hate that's what it came to before he was gone.
It kind of reminds me of rough. Paul Orndorff when he passed away. He also had a rough last couple of years before he unfortunately passed.
Yeah.
It sucks. Terry Funk is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time and such an endearing legend in the wrestling industry. We will talk a little bit more about it tomorrow, but I like you said, I just wanted to mention that up front because it is kind of a dark day for the world of professional wrestling. So I just wanted to just mention that. But we're going to keep this light and bubbly. We are talking about Barbie. She's having the best day ever, so we don't want to ruin that. turns out,
I feel like Barbie would enjoy wrestling.
Well, John Cena was in the film, so.
Exactly.
So, when you get down to Barbie, starting off, we are talking about directed by Greta Gerwig, fantastic director, and congratulations to her because she's the first female director to pass the, what is it, $1 billion?
The $1 billion mark. Office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, absolutely fantastic. Written by Noah Baumbach.
So actually, it was co-written by them. Greta did a large portion of the writing. Noah Baumbach is her writing partner. So I should have split that up, but she directed solely, and then the two of them wrote it together. He has a writing credit on it. I don't know how equal the pairing was there, but he has a writing credit on the movie, and they're the only two who do.
114 minutes, although it will breeze by and you won't want it to end. Overwhelmingly positive. 88% on Rotten Tomatoes. 80 out of 100 on Metacritic. Cinema score of A on an A+ to F scale. It did phenomenally both with sane people and people that can take a joke and people that can watch films and not drag politics into it necessarily. It did very poorly with the other side. There is a 43-minute video by a man with a very small penis who can't satisfy his wife. I won't say his name. destroying Barbie. Really took Barbie to town and hurt the box office. By the way, that box office is a budget of $145 million versus, as of counting, $1.28 billion.
And for the record, that's the high-end budget. So there's usually a low and a high-end budget. The low-end is mostly just your production costs, what it costs to make the movie.
Marketing.
And then the high-end counts your marketing. So the initial one does count some marketing, but the high-end is after everything. This is what it costs to make the movie. This is what it costs to get it out there, all the extra stuff we did until the movie's released. The 145 is the high-end number compared to 1.28 billion that it has made so far at the box office. Not to mention, it's only been out for a month. I know that seems like a long time in theater terms, but it's got some legs. It's got time to still stick around in the theaters. And I think it was only just
knocked off the
taken
top.
Down by Blue Beetle.
Blue Beetle. And it was close. It was close.
I was going to say, Shannon will appreciate that. I wish I'd sent it to you. I was coming across a bunch of Simpsons Bort posting earlier today, and one of them was just Apu watching the Blue Beetle poster walk away into the sunset, and he's like, well, he took down Barbie, and it was in her fourth week, and he only just barely did it. There goes the best superhero movie of 2020.
So, you know what? Before we get into the meat and potatoes of the film, it's a question I'm curious, Hunter, what you think. Do you think that if Barbie hadn't been out, would Blue Beetle have done better or worse?
I don't know, man. I think Blue Beetle was always going to kind of do what it did. I know we were talking about this a little bit last night, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. That it's I don't want to say it's been a surprise hit, but it has done a lot better than some people thought it would. And again, it's got very clear ties to a particular portion community. Of the community. So we saw this with Black Panther, right? Black Panther brought out African Americans. It brought out Black people to the box office in a big way. Wakanda Forever didn't do that quite as well, but it still managed to do the same thing. Blue Beetle does the same thing for the Hispanic and Latino communities. Latinx communities. That's great, and I'm glad that there is a movie that exists for them to do that and that represents them. But from what I'm gathering, the movie itself is not on par with Black Panther. Black Panther was one of the best movies in the Marvel pantheon for the longest time. Blue Beetle is fine. Again, it's there goes the best superhero movie of 2023.
It's a perfectly
in a year that doesn't have a lot of
film.
Competition.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm still interested in seeing it, but
sure. Yeah, it's not that it doesn't look interesting. It just does not look like something you've got to rush out to the box office and see.
It takes a lot to get me to go to the theater to watch a film. And the only movie I want to watch at the moment that is in theater is the Demeter film, because I love Dracula, and I'll watch any movies about Dracula. Yeah.
That thing's bombing hard, too, unfortunately. That's now the second Dracula movie that has bombed big at the box office this year.
And I liked Renfield. Renfield was fun.
That's not great.
But
I haven't watched it, but that's, you told me it was good, and I've heard nothing but from people I know who have seen it. It's good.
It's fun, but it's fun to watch. I would never watch Renfield and go, man, that's a good Dracula movie. It's not, but it's a fun movie. But I think this could be a good Dracula film. It's gotten pretty good reviews. It just didn't do great at the box office, which, oh my God, we're going to have to do a separate show, like an extras and epilogues extras, where we talk about whatever this curse is with the box office, where you have some movies come out and do absolutely insane numbers. Barbie, Oppenheimer, Evil Dead Rise was very popular. Mario did fantastic. And then you have movies that come out that should do really well and do poorly. Indiana Jones. So what is the deal? Like, what is happening? And that's a whole other show. But I think we should mention the fact that it is a weird box office right now. It is absolutely bad.
Ever since the pandemic. I mean, that sums up a lot of it without really giving an answer. But ever since the pandemic and the comeback from that, the box office has been wildly difficult to predict.
Yeah, 100%.
That's just the case.
So, thankfully, Barbie did very well, both critically and commercially, obviously. Let's talk about Barbie. Let's jump into it. So, this is I'll go first. This is a film that I never expected to love. I thought it would be funny. When they said they were making a Barbie film, I had no interest. No interest at all. Nothing personal against Barbie. I never had a Barbie. I never cared. Not my demographic. When Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling were attached to it, I did soften up a little bit. I like Greta Gerwig, so I thought, you know, maybe this could be interesting. Then the trailer dropped for it, and it was like a bomb. It was like the Manhattan Project. It was I loved it. The moment I saw the trailer, I told Lindsay, I want to go see this. This is going to be the best film.
I assumed I was going to go see this film by myself originally.
And I assumed you were too. But as fate would have it, the trailer for it was funny enough to me that I thought, if nothing else, that movie looks very interesting. It looks very unique, and I want to see what it is. It's the same reason we saw Aqua Teen Hunger Force in theaters. We knew it wasn't going to be a great film, but we liked Aqua Teen, and it was going to be an experience. It wasn't like anything else that was out there. So we go to see Barbie. We'll talk about the plot here in a second, but just personal thoughts on it. I was hooked almost immediately, and for the entire film, I was just staring at it. Not just the characters and the writing was very funny, it was very interesting, but like Ethan said a little while ago, the cinematography and just the look of the film, how everything looked so fake, but like purposely fake, it really did look like a toy box. It looked like Barbie's dream house. Yeah. It looked like Barbie's beach. They did such a good job representing the brand. And that's hard to do when it comes to toy brands and stuff like that, because how many times have we seen these soulless cash-ins on popular IPs? I mean, they made a movie about Battleship, for God's sake. That had nothing to do with Battleship, right?
Oh, it was terrible.
So if you know Barbie and how corny it is, you're probably thinking, well, how would they make a good film about this? And the way they made a good film about it was by flipping Barbie on its head. It was by taking the Barbie legacy and twisting it. Everyone, you know, the popular belief, as they said in the movie, is that Barbie saved the world for girls. Barbie paved the way, and now women could do anything. And that's what Barbie believes in her own world. When the truth of the matter is, as the other characters tell her, eventually Barbie did more to set women back than anything else, really. It is so fascinating to me that Mattel would allow them to do that to their brand, because that is a big risk. You run the risk of alienating people and kind of changing people's views of your product. It could have gone bad. They did not play it safe. And I have so much respect for them in that aspect. I absolutely love the film. I can't say that enough. Hunter, what are your thoughts?
Lindsay wants to say something. I'm going to let her go first. She's ready to go.
She's the resident
surprised.
Barbie expert, Lindsay Wolfgang.
I'm not surprised that they did it, though, because they've had so much backlash over the years for that exact reason. Like, the whole reason there's different diverse Barbies now is because of the whole you can't have this one image. It makes everyone think this is what's perfect. This is what you're supposed to have.
Which is
so
true.
So now they have all the different body types. They have all the different skin tones. They've changed all of that stuff up. They still have the fantasy Barbies. They still have the real life Barbies. Like, they have done a lot with the brand in the last 10 years. And at the beginning part of that 10 years, they were in the shitter. You yourself know that I was griping when we were at Toys R Us and I went down the Barbie aisle and there were no extra clothing for the doll at all. And that was like Barbie's main selling point when I was a kid, was all the clothing and play sets and accessories. Like, it used to be two aisles in the toy store that on one side was all the different dolls and the other side was all the outfits and play sets and accessories and all the stuff to help create Barbie's world.
Right. And then they took all of that, they took everybody's complaints, and they thought, well, instead of making a movie that just jacks off with Barbie, let's make a movie that's critical of Barbie. But in doing so, they told such a good story, and by the time the movie wraps up, like, I got it. And we'll get to the ending here in a little bit, because to me, the ending was the most important part for me. Not the very ending. That was very funny, but right before the very ending. But they took all of that and they turned it into a story that both, I mean, it didn't make sense. It was absolutely insane. But on an emotional level, it made sense. Like, it spoke to me. And it takes a lot for a film to speak to me like that. Hunter, go ahead.
Yeah, 100% my favorite part of this movie was not the movie itself, but watching my wife watch this movie. There's part of me, in a way, that wishes we had watched it at home just for that purpose. But I'm glad we got to go see it when we did. Because so often we go to see a movie, and it's almost always something that we both like, but I seem to know more about. Like, it's a Marvel movie, or it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or something. And so occasionally she doesn't lean over and ask, but she'll give me that look of like, I don't know what's going on, and then I have to give the quick explanation. Then we'll talk about it on the way home. Barbie was the exact opposite. Something would happen, and I would look at her, and she'd be like, "Yeah, no, that's real. That's a thing. They have those the clothes, like when they would freeze frame the clothes, they're like, oh yeah, that's a real thing.
I spent half the movie picking out Easter eggs on stuff.
Probably my favorite part of that was the when they're going through not just weird Barbie herself, but all the other ones, and she's like, oh god, it's Cochrane gang, Cochrane kid. Wait a minute, what? Oh, we gotta dig into that. Okay. No, it was great. It was such a great film, and again, I think you really summarized most of it to the point that I don't know that I feel that I need to, but I feel like you can go into that movie not knowing anything about the toys, right? Other than the general that they exist and here's what you need to know. I obviously, again, I didn't have a Barbie either. I was never the person to play with those as a kid or anything like that, so I didn't have that nostalgia factor, but I was able to see the through line of here's what the popular consensus is of this, and here's what we're going to do to turn it on its head. It's funny. It's got some action to it, which I think is great. There's a musical number out of nowhere a couple of different times. It's also great, and it really, to me, and maybe I'm getting too meta with it, I don't want to go too far over, but not only did it have the look of a toy box, but it had the feel of one as a movie. It's hard to genre define this movie, right? Yeah. There are elements of it that are almost horror-like. There are elements of it that comedy, are very existential. Obviously. It's comedy, it's action, it's musical, there's so much. And that's kind of what, as a kid, playing with your toys is like, right? You're doing one thing, then you're doing another thing. I know it wasn't really meant to emulate that, but it still felt like it did. And then, of course, you've got Will Ferrell in a suit and tie explaining how all of this stuff works, because that's when your dad comes in and goes, what are you doing? Oh, I get it. That thing does that and that. All right, cool. Do your thing. Whatever. It works. It's
really
great.
Fun Easter egg with him. He was basically dressed like one of the Ken dolls that came out in the 80s with the dark suit and the pink tie.
Yes. I love it.
Will Ferrell doing a great job.
Gordon Gekko Ken.
Doing a great job playing real people who have to deal with toy worlds and kind of, carries the,
but
the
I love,
plot.
What I love about the difference of that is in the Lego movie, he plays it very straight. It's very serious, right? After we get the real world sort of, version. But, what was his name? President Business or whatever is like more Will Ferrell. In this movie, from beginning to end, he plays it straight in a way that only Will Ferrell can, where it's still absolutely ridiculous.
Right.
But he's going to convince you that this is the way the things are, and he's just going to go with it, and you're going to go, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
I love the whole chase scene in the movie where she's running away from the businessman.
Yeah, again, the way that they portray Mattel, like, most companies probably wouldn't let you make fun of it like that. I mean, some companies are notorious for you don't make fun of them like that. And, like, part of me thinks that, you know, we talk about the Mario Brothers sometimes, because that's another movie that, you know, I think everyone liked, but some people liked more than others, and some people thought it was okay, some people thought it was great, but they played it so safe with the IP. They didn't take any chances with it. They didn't poke fun at themselves, really. It was very straight-laced. It's almost like Nintendo had a gun to them saying, like, you better make us look good. I ain't even kidding. But this movie did the opposite. They absolutely, attacked Mattel, made Mattel look silly. But, you know, that endears a company to people. When somebody can make fun of themselves, to me, that's so endearing. That's how I came to like so many of the musicians that I kind of like now. Like, I was never a huge Billie Eilish fan until I saw her on, like, SNL. And she's so funny, and she's making fun of herself. It was the same thing with Kesha. I saw Kesha was very funny and kind of down to earth. And whenever you can relate to somebody, it's like in politics, Hunter. You know, we're gearing up for the presidential election. The question with politicians is always, who would you rather have a beer with? It's that endearing cycle that really kind of made me like Mattel a little bit more on this. Even though now that, you know, post movie, we know they're coming out
terrible sales choices, but
they're also coming out with a movie based on every license they have now, because they're literally trying to create the Mattel.
Oh books. Yeah,
I'm not kidding.
Yeah,
that's what they're calling it. But before we get into any of that, Ethan, I'm gonna hand it over to you. Tell me what was your favorite part of this movie? What did you like the most? And was there anything you didn't like?
Honestly, I just really liked a lot of the writing. Like, right now, I'm looking at a bunch of the quotes from the movie. Like, I don't know. Well, we kind of talked about the spoilers a bit, but one of my favorite
spoil quotes the shit out of it. Go for it.
One of my favorite quotes.
People come into this show knowing that it's we're going to talk spoiled. About the movie. Right. Like, if you haven't seen it, this is not for you.
Right.
One of my favorite quotes is from Ken. To be honest, when I found out about the patriarchy wasn't about horses, I lost interest.
All right. So as the resident purveyors of horse time, everything Ken did and the horses cracked me up. In fact,
yes.
I thought I was going to like Ryan Gosling the most in this film just because I'm a big Ryan Gosling fan, and I knew his portrayal of Ken was going to be so over the top and stupid that there was no way I was going to like him the most. But in all honesty, I really did like Margot Robbie as Barbie the most. She was so good as Barbie.
She's such a good job.
She is such a touching actress when she wants to be, and funny, and she's the real deal. But Ken's horse obsession... Oh my god!
Yes.
Ryan Gosling as Ken in general. I put this down in the trivia. We were talking about it a little bit before the show, but I think it has to be said for people who don't know. You talk about perfect casting on both fronts for Ryan Gosling. The story that they told about how he got the role it literally sums it up. So he says that he took on the role. He was offered the role by Greta Gerwig. He was on the fence about it. He then saw that his daughter was playing with Barbies, and her Ken was laying face down in the mud next to a squashed lemon. So he took a picture of this, like, horror show, sent it to Greta Gerwig, and said, quote, "I shall be your Ken. His story must be told."
Yes. My poor Ken dolls have some horror stories, for sure. Needless to say, of the dolls that are still in my mother's attic, there is only one surviving Ken.
So. Sequel, they need to make weird Ken.
I think that was just Ken.
Oh, some of the ones in the 80s were weird looking, for sure.
Did you not hear us just talking about Cockering Ken?
He is earring That's magic Ken.
I don't remember what I was going to say now. Now I got distracted. It was something. He said something about Barbie, and I was going to talk about it. Ken was kind of the backbone of the film for me, for the most part, because he was... Again, Margot was a little bit more... her Barbie was a little bit more grounded, but Ryan Gosling's Ken was just everywhere. He was so ridiculous. From the outfits he wore, the little cowboy outfit is one of my favorite things in the world.
So that's a legit outfit from the 1970s.
Oh, I'm aware. They all are. when he wears the whole sleeveless, like, fur vest and, like, oh my god, he's so over the top and dumb. But at the same time, you feel bad for him. because they made me think in a way that I've never thought before, that there is no Ken without Barbie. There's a Barbie without Ken, but there's no Ken without Barbie. And his, you know, that is what made everyone so mad, and that's what the conservatives, not conservatives, but like the far right MAGA wing of the conservatives, that's kind of what got them all up in arms, because they thought it was anti-men, and they're making men look stupid, and that's not what I got from this film at all.
Well, until it made $1 billion, and then it was, no, actually, this is a stealth men's movie, because it's actually about reinforcing, are you kidding me?
Wow.
Now that it's over $1 billion, there are an awful lot of them who are like, no, are you not seeing this? Like, the movie reinforces gender roles. I'm like, yeah, okay, at the end, they get their way, but like, look at how much of the middle is like clearly the way they want it to go, and it's like, no, you fucking moron, that's how stories work. Things get bad and then they get good again.
It's 3X.
You don't get to pick the part of the movie you like to go, well, that's actually where they were talking to us.
Well, that's what a lot of people do with the Bible. So,
oh my god.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
But even if you take that third part into it, I thought it was still a good story for men, because Ken, I got it, man, he said he just wanted to be seen. And a lot of men, that is such a shot, and it is a shot at them, but that is such a shot at a lot of people in the world, men in the world, in America especially, and a lot of ones that follow the right wing, the Trump thing, and Americans that follow Trump, was that they just wanted to be heard. They wanted to be seen. They didn't feel like they were important. And that's what Ken felt. So it was very true to life, I thought. And in the end, he's empowered himself and says, I'm Knuff. Like, how do you take anything negative from this? It's ridiculous. Anyway. So, plot of the movie. We get that out of the way. And then we can talk about the ending, because I think the ending is the biggest gut punch this year I've had in cinema. Barbie thinks everything is great. She lives in her world. Everything's perfect. And then one day, and one of my favorite scenes of the film, when they're all dancing and having their house party, and it's the scene they show in the trailer where she looks gorgeous, and she does look gorgeous throughout the movie. She is Barbie. If I ever thought of a Barbie, it's Margot Robbie.
It's also one of the best scenes just in movies this year. Even if I can't say that it's absolutely my favorite movie of the year, this is maybe my favorite scene outside of Guardians. Like, it's my favorite scene of anything. And again, a new Indiana Jones movie came out this year. I can't get over that.
They're all dancing. It's this great dance sequence. It's so much fun. And then Barbie out of nowhere just says, do you guys ever think about dying? And record scratch, everything stops, comes to a complete halt.
Silence.
Yeah.
Just dying to keep dancing.
I can't remember the last time that I heard... Okay, not to, again, tangentialize too much here, but when the Sunny podcast was still running earlier in the summer before everybody went on strike, I distinctly remember Charlie talking a lot about how comedies are not happening at the theater anymore. It's so hard to get just a straight comedy movie into a theater and have it make money and make a big deal. But what's happening is comedy is being adapted into so many other things, and that was one of the things they were kind of eulogizing. Oh, Marvel's doing things that are kind of funny, and these guys are doing things that's kind of funny.
Adam Devine said the same thing. Like, big budget films are ruining comedies.
Exactly. But this, I mean, you talk about a perfect mic drop. That was a sitcom break.
Yeah.
If that movie played on television and you put a laugh track to it, there would be an extended laugh break there while that's happening. I mean, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. And there's lots of moments like that in the film where it's just so funny, but also poignant and also makes you think. So Barbie starts to go through this thing where she's becoming kind of more self-aware of mortality and what it is to be alive and human, or to wonder what it is to be human. She starts feeling bad, and no one ever feels bad in Barbie's world. The Kens are beaching off down there, and all the Barbies are successful and happy. She starts to develop cellulite. She starts to become human. You find out as she talks to Weird Barbie, played by Kate McKinnon. There's another one we forgot to mention at the beginning.
Who's
fantastic. I love her as Weird Barbie.
She's Weird Barbie.
Well, she's always in the splits, and she smells like basement.
She sets the stage for what's to come. She tells Barbie that Barbie's human is going through some things, and she needs to go to the real world and straighten it out. Which, that's it. That's the plot. There's no explanation. It's just go to the real world, Barbie.
That's the thing you can do.
Birkenstock.
Go to the real world.
In my
I want the high heel. Look, these weren't options. I didn't want you to actually.
That's my other favorite part.
I'm showing them to you, but
it's very Matrix-like. You know, the famous scene from the Matrix, red pill, blue pill, and Neo takes the right one. Kate McKinnon presents Margot Robbie with two sets of shoes and says, you can either stay here and everything stays the same, or you can go to the... And before she can even finish, Barbie's like, I'll take that one. It's hilarious how not brave Barbie is at first, but my God, what a journey she goes on. She goes to the real world to find her human. Ken tags along in another great scene. Did you bring your roller skates? I don't go anywhere. I literally go nowhere without them.
Did you bring your rollerblades?
They go to the real world. Barbie finds out that the world isn't as great as she thought it was going to be, and it's all ran by men. In another one of my favorite scenes, they go talk to some construction workers to try to get directions. And when she catches on that they're flirting with her and hitting on her, her reaction of like, oh, I don't have a vagina, which is just so...
And he doesn't have a penis.
He doesn't have a penis.
We have no genitals.
I have all the genitals.
The kid's response is, I have all the genitals.
It's just so matter-of-factly, the way she just goes, I don't have a vagina. Like, there's no malice or anything. It's just an explanation. Ken, while Barbie is finding her human, Ken discovers that men rule the world and starts to feel empowered and seen, and of course becomes egotistical, escapes back to Barbie's world, turns all the Barbies into servants somehow. They don't really explain.
Basically, hostesses is more of a better term on it, because they're all literally serving them beer and bringing them treats.
Yeah. Barbie and her human go back to Barbie's world to try to fix things. They do, of course, but it's hilarious. I don't want to spoil too much in case you... Well, if you're watching, if you're listening to this show and you haven't seen the film, that's on you. Yeah. That's on you.
Yep.
Yep.
That's on you. Let's jump into the ending, because to me... So Barbie's running
from... I love that Alan isn't affected like the Kens, and he's on the team helping them. He's like, no, this is terrible. Go back.
Well, that's because, I mean, Alan's getting into the real world all the time, Lindsay. You remember NSYNC? All of them. Yeah. Even that one.
And no one cared. Alan's.
No one cared.
He's never getting out of that world.
Michael Cera is Alan, by the way. But just in general, the Michael Cera renaissance over the past like year or so, because he showed up in Black Mirror. Now he's doing this. It's great. It's so much fun to watch him just do stuff again.
Barbie, when all the dust is settled, we'll skip to the end. They fix everything. They trick the Kens into turning on each other. And then Barbie takes power back. They have a vote that the Kens forget to go vote on because they're all fighting. Also extremely funny. And in the end, when everyone goes back to being Barbie, Barbie realizes that she's not Barbie, basically. She's not smart enough to be smart Barbie. She's not, you know, whatever, whatever. And
she was stereotypical Barbie. That was the thing. Was early in the movie they identified her specifically as stereotypical Barbie, and they're like, "That's not great,
right?
That's not what you want to be."
Yeah. And while she's giving the speech, in a list of my favorite moments from the movie, here's another one of who? Oh God, who's doing the voiceover for it? I forget. Who's the narrator?
Oh, Helen Mirren.
Helen Mirren.
Yes.
Helen Mirren talks about how, you know, Barbie is giving her big heartfelt speech about how she's not special in any way. And Helen Mirren comes on and says,
she says she's not pretty enough.
Yes.
Is what it was.
Yeah.
And she says to the directors of this film, Margot Robbie was the worst choice for this speech.
Worst person to cast to say these things.
And Barbie meets the ghost of the creator of Barbie, which played by Rhea Perlman, another fantastic role and very sweet. And she decides she wants to be human because, as she told Barbie, Barbie doesn't have an ending. You know, you could basically do whatever. And then I knew it was coming. And I remember, because through the whole film, I hadn't cried. I've laughed. I've teared up once or twice when they're talking about things. The old lady on the bench, when she sits down next to her and tells her she's beautiful, was a tearjerker moment. But it was a sweet tearjerker moment. And then when Rhea Perlman's character says that to Margot Robbie's character, I remember thinking to myself, oh God, I don't like where this is going. I know it's going to be bad. And she tells
the build-up to that, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, the build-up to that is where it started to get me, because when they start to have that conversation, Ruth identifies herself as a mother. Now, they made a joke earlier about Will Ferrell's character as the CEO asking Barbie to call him mother, and she goes, no, I will not do that.
No.
but no, Ruth, no, thank you. Is, her creator, and she says at one point in time, and I love this freaking line so much, for somebody who has no interest in having children, this still got to me, where she says, "Mothers stand still so that our daughters can look back and see how far they've come."
Oof.
And it just, it's the beginning of the end of any dry face in the theater at that
point. To stop myself from tearing up right now, I'll mention that of another throwaway joke that is just like, yeah, it makes sense because they said it and you don't question it, is when Will Ferrell's character says that her ghost has an office on like floor whatever.
On the 17th floor.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
They just keep a space for her.
Yeah. I didn't question it. She tells Barbie she wants her to know what it's like to be human. So she reaches out and touches her hand. And as she's going to touch her hand, in my head, I'm thinking to myself, like, I need an escape plan here. Do I close my eyes and kind of like cover my ears a little bit like I do in horror films when I don't want to be jump scared? Or do I take the blow and just see what happens? And I said, blow me. Well, I wish I hadn't said that, though. So...
You said it aloud in the theater, and that's why now we have to recap the end, because you didn't get to see it.
I don't know what happened beyond that point.
This is new information for you.
She touches Barbie hands, and there's this montage of families and life, and oh my god, it's genuinely so heartwarming. And it's one of those things that really, like, it. Lindsay, when she came home today, she's talking about how much she hates people. And, like, I get it, I agree, but at the same time, I see something like that, it reminds me of just how precious life is, and people are, and we don't get it right, but we're human, we make mistakes, we say stupid things, we do stupid things, it's what makes us human, and that's that whole montage, and it was, at that point, I was absolutely in tears, I was trying my best to hold him back because I didn't want this theater of probably little girls and women to see this giant hulking man just bawling over Barbie. But at that point, I was choking back tears.
That scene just made me smile. That one didn't make me tear up. That just...
Anything to do with humanity and life and the desire to keep living or the beauty of life gets to me because I'm on that weird side of it, as you know. So it got to me a lot, and if that scene hadn't been in the film, like if it had just kind of ended on, okay, they fixed everything and now Barbie goes back to being Barbie, I still would have liked the film a lot. I would have loved it. It would have been a thumbs up. But it was that scene and the whole idea of what it is to be human, what it is to be a human being, the flaws, the happiness, that Barbie gave up all of the perfect life because she wanted to experience the highs, the lows, everything that it means to be human. That is what put it over the top for me as a double thumbs up and my favorite film of the year. It was so, in that moment, it did what so many films that take themselves seriously and set out to make you feel something, it did what they try to do so much better than them in a film about Barbie by Mattel. And that movie that scene made me absolutely love the film, and it will be what sticks with me for probably the rest of my life. With me saying that and Lindsay saying it made her smile, I am curious, Hunter, I'll start with you. What did you think of that scene?
We're talking strictly just from the time they start talking to the end of that sequence where Barbie's officially human, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit that I also teared up in the theater. That happens to me more often than not
cried.
Now that I'm over 30.
Hunter, no, I cried. I was full on crying.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's now a thing where if there's even remotely a good emotional moment in a movie, it's going to get me. But that was one that I didn't even attempt to hold back from. I knew having seen it, because I think you guys went and saw it like a day before we did.
Yep.
I knew
in
that moment.
We saw it opening day, and I, literally first viewing that I did not realize it was the first viewing.
So we saw it the day after, which is, I remember distinctly thinking, well, I know exactly what got Shannon, because I knew that the talk of humanity and basically the talk of life and death was going to do it. It's such a, I hate to overuse like such a generic word, interesting way to approach that character and that topic, but that's what that whole movie is. I mean, it's constantly tonally changing while it has that same through line in the background. And so for it to finally come to that point, I think the only time I was concerned in that movie was that once the Kens were usurped, I thought, oh no, if that's it, then they didn't finish the job. Because that's a great little ending, but it really doesn't solve everything, right?
Doesn't it really matter right.
for Barbie or for her people, you know, that is the two humans. So for them to bring it back around to that and to have that actual I didn't even think they'd bring back Ruth until she showed up there at the very end. But to finally bring it back to that and to have, for them to just have that moment and for her to say, look, you don't really have a set ending. And for that not to be a good thing. Like, that's not what I want. I want to know what the ending is going to be. I want to know what it's going to be like. It reminds me a lot, kind of weirdly, of the ending of The Good Place when that series ended and that everybody had kind of got what they wanted. And that's when the characters could go, you know what? That's why I want to move on. I've got what I want. I don't want to just have what I want forever. It's not special if it doesn't eventually end.
Right.
Yeah. It's hard to take in a lot of ways, but I do love, for the record, that they ended it on that little joke at the end just to bring
the,
it back
the stinger.
Up
yeah.
And have fun with it.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that here and then talk about what happens after the credits. But Ethan, same question to you. What did you think of that scene? What did it mean to you?
That scene, whenever I remember watching it in theaters for the first time, and I'm like, wow, you know, this is really something. It's kind of indescribable to me. Like, I wasn't like crying, but I definitely felt like heavy emotions in it. Like, it really did make me think, or really did help me think about like life and the perception of humanity and what it means to be human.
And
it's incredible.
Also, I just now realized that I was the only one crying during that scene. Well, let's drink some more whiskey and forget that.
I mean, I don't remember the last time that I just like cried for an. If you're talking about for an extended period of time,
I mean, like, I wasn't sitting out there like, you know, with a tissue or anything, but like tears were definitely falling like consistently. And I wish
if you want to call that crying, then that's what I was doing. I think of that as tearing up.
I wish I could say that like that is not something that happens to me a lot, but it doesn't take much to like make me tear up like that. I don't think. I mean, I teared up like that during Mario. Just seeing, and it wasn't a particular scene, like it wasn't the acting, that's for sure. Wow, that was harsher than I meant it to be. it was just the, you know, seeing the Mushroom Kingdom on the big screen, seeing fire flowers as a literal, you know, sea of flowers there, field of flowers. It was like Lindsay watching World of Warcraft and Ethan and seeing the Murloc.
I teared up during that.
Yeah, it's just that idea of these things that mean something to you and now you're seeing it in a different way. It just meant a lot. But this was different than that because, again, I had no attachment to Barbie. I have zero attachment to Barbie. No, never cared about him. The closest I ever got to getting a Barbie was when my dad, God rest his smutty soul, got mad at me for buying a... what is her name? She-Ra? Yeah, for buying a She-Ra doll.
Action figure.
Because I liked He-Man, and I was like, well, this is He-Man's girlfriend. I want both of them. But my dad got, it was
it's his sister.
What?
She-Ra is He-Man's sister.
I did not know that. Well, I just learned something on the show.
That's why he was mad at you. It wasn't because of that. It's because you were trying to role play incest with your little toy.
He saw me banging. But He-Man was banging my She-Ra toy, and he's just like, that boy ain't right.
That ain't it.
Nope.
Lindsay, what is the world that He-Man is from?
Shit.
Eternia?
Is it Etheria? No, Etheria is where... Eternia. Yeah, Eternia and Etheria is where She-Ra is at.
Okay, because I thought it was Arkansas.
Maybe it's Space Arkansas.
Sorry, Austin Lane.
Space Arkansas. Hang on, keep talking. I gotta go check.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I gotta do a thing.
So this is the part of the show.
One other trivia fact: technically, Barbie and Ken are named after Ruth's kids.
That's why
Barbie and Ken are also technically brother and sister.
That's why they didn't. That's why they didn't hook up. Oh, that's another thing. One thing I didn't expect was for Barbie to not fall in love with Ken. Like, you just assume by the end of the movie, I thought the whole time they're going to fall in love during the journey and get together in the end. That's the happy ending, and completely subverted my expectations. Ken ended up. I mean, Barbie literally looked at Ken and said, "I'm not gonna, you know, fall in love with you. That's never gonna happen." And you would think that was a bad ending for Ken, but in reality, again, it taught that you can stand on your own, that you don't have to be with somebody, that you don't have to be in love. You are your own person, and you are enough. What the fuck, conservatives? That is such a good fucking message, you fucking backwood cucks. Oh, God. So anyway, right before the credits, they bring... They bring the movie back to a funny state. They drop Barbie off in the real world to what I assumed, again, turned... They tricked
right. me. You think she's going to work at Mattel, right? You think she's going to go work at her company and she's going to fix everything.
And that's not what happened. Nope. She's there to see her gynecologist. And then the movie ends.
Yeah. Barbara Handler.
Just done.
That's so good. What a fantastic movie. Absolutely loved it. I love that movie so much. I can't wait to watch it again. Let's talk about what happens after the credits. This is, boy, this could go anywhere. We know that she had her gynecologist appointment, but beyond the gynecologist appointment, what happens?
Do you ever think you'd be saying that on this show, by the way?
No.
Okay, well, we know that she got to see her gynecologist, but what happens then?
Not just what happens to her, but what happens in the world of Barbie, because, you know, they started to talk about putting men in more lower end of power. What happens to Ken? What happens to, I mean, there's so many ways you can go with this.
So I hate to take this away. First of all, this might be controversial. I hope they don't make a sequel to this movie.
Don't ruin the magic.
I know it made over $1 million. It doesn't need a sequel. At the very least, if they're going to sequelize it in some way, it's not these characters. It's not this story. There's a million other Barbies out there. You could do some fun stuff probably with weird Barbie and her little crew. But I hope these characters get to retire as they are. But what I was going to say before was I kind of don't think Barbie story, stereotypical, you know, who was stereotypical Barbie and who becomes Barbara Handler at the end. I don't think her story after this needs to be touched either, because anything you do with it becomes a little too hokey, a little too comedic. I think what happens to her after this movie is she actually gets to go on and live a normal life, and it's something that wouldn't make
her. She's had a learning curve on how to be an actual person.
Exactly. Yeah. She gets to hook up with the
and
people
gets
who
to
were
feel all that pain America talked about.
But there's your sequel. Is her in the real world, and look how kooky it is that she doesn't know this is a normal thing, and she's in her bathing suit walking down the street because she doesn't know that that's not something people do. There's the sequel. You just wrote it.
I don't like that at all. That's life size. They made that movie already. I'm good on that.
Yeah, that's been done.
No, I'll tell you the real sequel again. If you've got to use these characters again, and this is where
Ken finding himself.
Exactly. I was going to say, this is where it's going to feel controversial, because I feel like, good, it's coming back to a dude again. It's coming back to a man. But the Ken character would have an actual story to tell after that, because who does he become and what does he do in that new hierarchy?
Okay, can I spoil it for you real quick? Can I spoil it?
Yeah,
you just,
that's what we're doing here, right?
You just wrote the whole movie, so here's what happens. It's a two-part film. On one is Barbie in the real world trying to adjust to being a human, and she's having trouble doing it. On the other side is Ken trying to find himself, and he's having trouble doing it because he misses Barbie. Eventually, Barbie starts to self-doubt herself, and she goes back to Barbie land because she wants to see if maybe she made the wrong choice. She discovers Ken again. Ken goes back to the real world with her, and they start... he helps her kind of live a normal life because he studied it so much in the first film, and then they actually fall in love and end up together at the end of the sequel. Boom. It's written.
And they have a horse.
Mattel.
I'm so glad that the man came along and fixed all the problems. Greta Gerwig would never. She would never.
For the record,
there's no way. This is why there shouldn't be a sequel.
For the record, Greta Gerwig will not direct the sequel. It would be directed by Mick G.
I just assumed you were going to say, what's his name? Transformers. Michael Bay.
Michael Bay.
Michael Bay will direct the sequel.
Oh, gosh. All the dream houses explode.
And the Ninja Turtles are in it. It's weird. They're not even Mattel.
I said that jokingly,
but I have no doubt if they take it away from Greta Gerwig and decide to make a sequel without her, and they just
be
in house, that's the film.
They'll do it without all those people too, because there's no way that Margot Robbie or Ken or Ryan Gosling sign. I almost called him Ken. That's how much I think of him. Ryan Gosling sign up for that film. There's no chance in hell that they would do that.
All right.
Again, I legitimately think that a good sequel doesn't follow those characters at all. And I know that's not really what the show is. It's supposed to be what happens to those characters afterward. I think we've already talked about that. If you're going to sequelize it, though, if you want to know what happens to those other characters afterward, that's more interesting. I want to know what happens with President Barbie and with John Cena the Mermaid. I want to know where they go after this, because that I don't know. I think I can explain what the other characters are doing. These I don't know.
I think Ryan Gosling could still play a cameo in that one. Maybe Margot Robbie too at some point, but all right. 100 thinks nothing should happen, and if we do explore the other characters, I don't want, but dread that they will, turned it into a standard sequel love story. Lindsay, what do you think happens after the credits? What happens to these characters?
I kind of agree. Like I said, I think Barbie's going to have a learning curve on like getting her way around the world, because she seems to have a little bit of an understanding, but she's also still got the quote-unquote rose-colored glasses from Barbie World.
Right.
So she's going to have some rude awakenings if she hasn't already sort of grasped it from her first run-through.
Well, here's my question about that real quick. Talking about Barbie, in the real world, does she hook up with Pete Davidson?
Yes.
Yes.
Anyway.
Maybe.
That's the answer. Yes.
And then Kanye hates him. Go on, Lindsay. I'm sorry. What else?
No, you're good. You're good. And on the flip side, I guess in the Barbie world, I really do feel like it's still going to mostly be Barbie-centric as far as that goes. And we'll probably end up just kind of reverting back to where it was. Because, like, just looking at the toys as a whole, like, yeah, they've been putting out more, like, variations in Ken and stuff, but most people still just want Barbie. So.
But now he's Ken-uff. This movie did more for Ken than anything ever did. I know so many dudes, including one of the guys I used to work with at what I can now legally tell you was a medical marijuana dispensary, because I no longer work there. yeah, that's a story in itself. But one of the guys I work with, Seth, love the dude. He looks exactly like Ryan Gosling. I'm not kidding. People say no, they don't. Even people we worked with said no, he doesn't. And I would pull up a picture of Ryan Gosling and they would go, oh shit, yeah, that's exactly like him.
Oh my God.
He couldn't wait to order.
You desperately want to have him dress up in the fur coat and bandana.
I don't have to. He's going to. I'm pretty sure for Halloween.
Is that Halloween?
Yeah.
Nice.
I also watched him order the I'm Ken-uff hoodie. So, yeah. Nice. This movie did so much for Ken. Ethan, I'll present the question to you, and then we are out of here for the week, or at least for this show. What do you think happens to these characters after the fact?
I kind of, like, I don't know. The movie is so good that I'm like, I don't want to know, almost.
That's right. That's right. Come
I'm
to
gonna
me.
Have to... I kind of agree with Hunter on this. Yeah, it just perfectly ends it. The way, do I think it actually is going to be, like, done and over with? No.
No, money talks.
Yeah, money does talk. But, like, as a film, I'm just like, this is perfect. This is exactly how I want everything to end.
Yes. So. All good things must come to an end. Some people don't understand that, and that is what we're going to do, actually. Barbie was amazing. If you haven't seen it, I recommend you go see it. And if you're a conservative that has to lie to yourself and say that it was always a man's movie to begin with, sure. You're still putting money in Greta Gerwig's pocket.
Just keep buying the tickets.
Yeah.
Yep.
Margot Robbie is crying herself all the way to the bank. And Ken Gosling could fuck every one of your wives.
Ken Gosling.
I mean, Ryan Gosling, fuck! Oh my God!
Ken Gosling. Oh my God.
Alright, well, normally this is the part of the show where we have one of our guests decide what we're going to do next week, but I think we already know what we're going to do next week. We're going to do that election show, finally. So that'll be next Wednesday. Again, that is Reese Witherspoon and Matthew Broderick. It is a hilariously dark film.
Chris Klein. Yeah. Oh my God. So full disclosure, we watched it on Sunday thinking that it was going to be done this week. And that's another movie that, much like what we've done in the past couple, if I had seen it, unlike The Matrix, which I hadn't seen at all, I hadn't seen in years. I forgot how good this movie was. I don't want to give too much away right now, but it's going to get a big, bit of approval from me.
It's another one I haven't watched, so I'm going to have to watch that before I listen to the episode. Otherwise,
it will be spoiled. Yeah.
So on Max, you can watch it now. If you have that through Hulu, you can watch it there as well.
We have Max, so
perfect.
Yeah, we can do that. So yeah, Barbie, fantastic. This is the first movie on the list that got double thumbs up from everybody. This movie is a great uniter. So go see it if you haven't seen it. Go back and listen to last night's all new wink episode of Podzilla After Dark that we absolutely did not film last week, but forget to post because I had a busy weekend. And then tomorrow we're back with an all new Podzilla After Dark. Lindsay, what's our top five?
I have no clue. I haven't even thought about it.
Right. Top five movies of 2023.
Top five Margot Robbie films.
I feel like that would all be the same list at this
top
point.
Top five several times.
Top five, 55. Anyway.
No.
All right. Thank you guys. We'll see you tomorrow for all new After Dark. Until then, the balcony is closed. Good night.